Go ahead and take a seat, please. You want to have your Bibles open to John chapter 21 this morning. There's a fictional story about a boy named Danny. When he was 15 years old, his dad died. And he realized as soon as his dad died that he had a problem. And the problem was that he had these snapshots, these single pictures of his dad's life. But as a 15-year-old boy, he wasn't curious enough to ask about how all of those different pictures connect with each other. So for example, he said, I knew that when my dad was born and that he was raised in a poor family, in a poor household. I knew that when he died, he was wealthy. But what Danny said is, I had no idea about the bridges in his life. How did he get from there to here? And he said that it's pretty difficult as a child to follow in your dad's footsteps if you have no idea what bridges he took to get from place to place and from situation to situation. One of the blessings of the Gospel of John is that John does provide us with a bridge. The bridge is what we will call John 21, where it helps us understand how is it that we go from reading about these disciples in the Gospels in Matthew and Mark and Luke and John to then we get to the book of Acts and all of a sudden these seem like entirely different people. How did they get from there to here? And John 21 is one of the ways that John helps answer and explore that question about and in regards to the disciples. And most specifically, John is interested in Peter's story. And how is it that Peter went from there to here? So we have these pictures in John's gospel. We'll go back to the beginning of the week before Jesus' death. And we have these images. And the first is we have Peter, remember, in a conversation with Jesus. He's having a sidebar there. And Peter says, I will die for you. Well, we see Peter, I think, is wanting to kind of fulfill that promise, and he takes out a sword and he cuts off a guy's ear, and Jesus tells Peter to put the sword away, that he's going to drink the cup that he was called to drink. The next image we have of Peter is he's there with groups of people, and on three separate occasions, people say, hey, weren't you one of the guys with him? And Peter said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And we recognize and we see these pieces, they come together and they fall together. And then if we were to jump forward about 50 days, what's Peter doing? He's standing up in front of a group of people and he's proudly proclaiming the name of Jesus. And you wonder, where's the bridge? How did that Peter get from there? And John's answer will have two parts. The first part is the part in John 20 where there's this recognition that Peter saw the empty tomb and he saw the resurrected Jesus. And so part of how is it that Peter got from there to here is through those that witnessing and through that experiencing. But for John, there's more to Peter's story than just simply this. There's some unfinished business. There's some seams that are loose that John needs to connect so that he will help us understand how it is the disciples went from where they were to who they came to be. And I think that we can understand the importance of this, the need to connect with John 21. I mean, if you think about the fact that there's in a single day in 2012 that Lance Armstrong lost 12 of his largest sponsors. $150 million annually worth of sponsorship, all gone in a moment. You know what he did, right? Taking performance-enhancing drugs. And so among the many people, you have, for example, a company like Nike who drops him for that event. Now, what do you think would happen if 50 days later, you see Lance Armstrong get up on TV, and he's talking about, and he's endorsing Nike products? Do you have any questions? I've got questions. Is he doing this as something that Nike is paying them? Have they renewed the relationship? How does Nike feel about the things that they're saying? Do they endorse him? Do they support him? What's their stance on what Lance Armstrong is doing? And so if we don't have any kind of a bridge and we leave Peter denying Jesus and then Jesus says, hey, I'm going to be a spokesman for Jesus, I'm going to say, I don't know. Can we trust this guy? How does Jesus feel about the fact that Peter is claiming to be a spokesperson for him? And what John wants to do is he wants to help us to put the information together about John being a spokesperson for Jesus. And John is representative of each of the disciples who have to go through this transformation as they begin to do what God has called them to do. So it was back in 20 that Jesus said, as the Father sent me, so I am sending you. Jesus sends them out. It's John's version of the Great Commission. And as you read about Jesus sending them out, what do you expect John 21 to be about? I'd expect them out. You know, they're out there doing that stuff. They're out there doing everything that Jesus told them to do. But we're going to find out as we get to John 21, there's some unfinished business. Some things that need to be addressed and some things that need to be resolved before we get to the sending ministry. So let's begin reading John chapter 21. And we'll read the first three verses. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. That's the Sea of Galilee. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. And Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we will go with you. And they went out and they got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Ever since John chapter 12, the middle part of 12 through John 20, we have been in Jerusalem. They have been there with Jesus. And now they're in Galilee. And I'm going to try and say this without inserting my own opinion in this statement, and they're going fishing. And I think John wants us to read that as some missional hesitation. Jesus sends them out, go to these new frontiers, go to these new places. Where do they go? They go back home, and they go back to plan B. It's almost as if, rather than going to where they've been sent, they just go back to the comfortable things that they know. And they're displaying some hesitation to be sent out by Jesus, and instead they're preferring what is known. They're preferring what is comfortable. But I think there is to be an echo in what happens when they go fishing. We would expect these seasoned fishermen are going to come back with at least some fish, right? I mean, this is their profession. You're not going to make a lot of money if you don't know how to catch fish as fishermen. But we are told that after that night of fishing, how much had they caught? They caught nothing. And I think that word nothing is to be an echo to something that Jesus said back in John chapter 15, verse 5, when Jesus said, apart from me, you can do nothing. After their encounter with Jesus, they think they can go back to their old life, to their old ways, and just pick up with what they're doing before. But they've been told by Jesus, if you try to do things without me, if you try to move forward on your own strength, the results will be nothing. And they have just reaped the rewards of what Jesus had said. And so there they are, they're fishing. And as the sun begins to come up in the morning, they notice a guy who's standing there on the shore. And the guy calls out to them and he says, children, you have not fish, have you? And the guys say, no, we have no fish. And he says, well, cast your net on the right side of the boat. They obey him, and they do that, cast it on the right side. And what the man said would happen, they cast it out, and they were not able to handle it because there were so many fish. And it was the disciple whom Jesus loved who said to Peter, it is the Lord. And Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, and he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and he jumped into the sea. There's an irony in the resurrection. We say with the resurrection, it represents new creation. Everything new has come. There's transformation. There's change. The world will never be the same. And yet when Peter impulsively just jumps out of the boat and starts swimming to Jesus, surely one of the disciples is like, same old Peter. Classic Peter. I mean, he's doing the kinds of things that we expect Peter to do, which are just impulsive things, and he starts to swim. The other guys are like, look, we're only 100 yards from shore. We're going to just get the boat over there. And apparently, it seems like they both arrive at the same time to the shore. And so when they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. And Jesus invited them to bring some of the fish that you have just caught." Peter goes, he picks up that net with 153 fish, and he brings the fish to Jesus. Notice how that's strange, that request is. It's like we've already got burgers on the grill. Go get burgers for the grill. Jesus is inviting the disciples to add what they have received to what Jesus himself has already provided. And then in John 21, verses 12 through 14, Jesus said to them, "Come now and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and he did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. I think that we are to understand this story as something that Jesus did that has a greater symbolic meaning. Lots of time the prophets would do that. They wouldn't just say words. They would enact certain things that are to teach and to communicate a message. And that is the recognition that Jesus is saying to the disciples is, as you're out fishing, you cannot do it in your own strength. Whatever you bring in is going to be added to the collection, and that Jesus will, as he did when he was with them, he will feed them. He will give them what they need to survive. He will give them what they will need to flourish as individuals. But there is this hesitation. And I think that what we'll find is three different aspects of their hindrance, their hesitation in doing the work that Jesus has called them to. And the first, I think, that we see in this text is feeling inadequate. Jesus has sent them out. And how many people, when they are sent out, called to go, to bring fish in, to feed the sheep, how many people would ever just simply say, "Oh yeah, I've got this, I can handle that calling. You pick the right person for the job." No, they have gone back to Galilee and they have gone back to fishing because they're sure Jesus has made the wrong choice. They're not able to do the things that Jesus has called them to do. But what was one of these themes in the farewell discourse that in John 13 through John 18 that there's this focus on? "I will be with you." And if Jesus is with them, they can bring in the fish that they're being called to bring in and to catch and to produce. And what I want us to recognize that is that the gospel gives a very different narrative when it comes to our inadequacy. Here's what I think is the cultural answer to experiences or feelings of inadequacy. Culture says, "You can do it." That they're going to take you over in a mirror and they're going to say, "Just look at yourself and say, I can do it. I just got to be the little engine that could. I've got these capabilities and these resources within me, and I just have to tap into that capability, have to tap into those resources, and then I will be adequate for the job in front of me." Jesus has a very different approach when it comes to our feelings of inadequacy. The gospel answer is yes, he can. Cultural answer says, "Look in the mirror and you'll see all the resources you need there." And the gospel answers, "Look out the window, look on the shore, and there's a man who is there who can help you, equip you, enable you, empower you to do the things that on your own you are not capable of doing." And so Jesus, through this experience, is trying to remind the disciples that with him, they are adequate and they are capable for the mission to which they called them. So John wants us to just be sure that these weren't just exceptional people, that when Jesus said, "You guys go," they, "Yep, okay, we can do this," and they off they go. They need some additional encouragement, some reminders that Jesus is there to provide for their needs. Well, the second piece of kind of missional hesitation that we're going to see in this passage is that specific to Peter, and I think possibly extending beyond that, is this being haunted by the past. I mean, it's one thing for Jesus to say, "Send you guys," but then you look in the mirror and like, does he have any idea who I am? Does he have any idea what I've done? So there is in John 21 an echo that goes back to John 18. Remember, they come ashore and they saw a charcoal fire there with fish and oil on it and bread. And there's an echo again to something that happened in John 18. John 18, 18. "Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing around it and warming themselves." And that's where Peter denied Jesus, standing around that charcoal fire. People have a love-hate relationship with memories. Some of those memories are great memories and you want to hold on to them. You want to cling to those memories, the first kiss, the first time you met a great friend, that retirement party where everyone said, "Oh, I mean, we want to hold on to those memories." And then aren't there also some memories we would just love to let go of and forget? That thing you said that you wish you didn't say? That thing you did that you wish you didn't do? And you have those negative memories, and then you have the worst possible thing, which is certain things just trigger it. And just remind you, yeah, you did that. Yeah, you said that. And so when Peter comes ashore and he sees that fire, that would be a trigger for, I'm sure, a moment that Peter says, can we just somehow forget that? I mean, Jesus is sending me out, but I can't go. Look at what I've done. I have these memories. See, we tend to think about life in one of two ways. And Jesus is going to call Peter back to this reminder of a conversation that they had earlier. This is from back in John 13. Jesus said to the disciples, he said, where I am going, you cannot come. Well, Peter's, he's going to pursue this a little bit. And so he has this sidebar conversation with Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus answered, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow me afterwards. Jesus' answer was not no. His answer was not yet. Jesus saying, there's going to come a time when you will follow me. But the pathway and the trajectory of that for Peter might be a little different than we're used to. And Peter's so convinced he's ready. Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Well, maybe there's going to be something more required in this discipleship. See, we tend to think that a life of discipleship is going to look like this. I become a Christian, and then everything's just up and up and up and up, and I'm getting more mature, and I'm growing, and I'm becoming sanctified, and everything's just upward bound. This might be more what it looks like, isn't it? We have ups, we have downs, we move forward, we move back. Our overall trajectory is in the right direction, but there's some mistakes that are made along the way. I mean, Jesus is very clear with Peter that this is what his trajectory is going to look like. You cannot follow me now, but you will follow me afterwards. In other words, Jesus knows there's going to be some dips here. There's going to be some low points, Peter, but you will follow me. It kind of explains this really, really strange, there's two verses that John puts together, and I think, how do these even fit together? Jesus just tells John, you will have denied me three times. And what's the very next thing Jesus says? The very next thing Jesus says, John chapter 14, verse 1, do not let your hearts be troubled. I wonder if Jesus has a different perspective on our lives than we have. Oh, you're going to blow it. You're going to blow it big time. But don't let your heart be troubled. This is going to be worked out. There's probably going to be one person who's going to say, no, that's irreconcilable. That's not forgivable. There's no possibility to pull myself out of that. And Jesus says, don't let your heart be troubled. We're going to get you where we need to get you. And so Peter is dealing with this sin that he has. And Jesus is the one who continues to encourage him. Sometimes we imagine God to be the kind of a father that's like take a little toddler and they're learning to walk and put them down and they take a step, but it's all wobbly and they're bouncing and then they fall over. What do you do? Get them, you pick them up and say, okay, let's go. I mean, can you imagine a parent who said, I told you to walk and you didn't walk, and whack, whack. Jesus seems to expect it's going to be wobbly, the journey you're going to take. And it's only us who think, well, maybe if I've never walked before, put me on the ground, I'll know exactly what to do. And so Peter is very hesitant because of his past to participate in the mission to which God has called him. And so it's this conversation between Jesus and Peter in John 21, 15 through 17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. And a third time, Simon Peter, son of John, do you love me? And Peter felt hurt because he said it to him three times, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. What I think is happening here is this reaffirmation. Three times Peter denies Jesus, and three times he's given an opportunity to reaffirm his love. But this has to be dealt with before Peter can participate in the calling of the mission of being sent. But I think the question that Jesus is asking of Peter, which is the question, do you love me, is actually rooted in a separate question, which is, does Jesus love Peter? Because there's no point in Peter loving Jesus if that's not something that he can recognize or see. And the answer to that question, of course, is absolutely. How does Jesus define love? No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend. Does Jesus love Peter? Absolutely. He laid down his life for his friends. And now what Jesus is asking Peter is, Peter, as you've seen love, true love, self-sacrificial love, will you love me in this same way? Jesus becomes the model of what love looks like. He's mentioned this a few times in John. This is John 15:12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. 13:34. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. Peter has now witnessed the very love of Christ, a love that is self-sacrificial, a love that gives, a love that lays down one's life. And Jesus is asking Peter, are you willing to love like the love you've seen? And he's giving Peter an opportunity to go back to that earlier promise and to decide what he's going to do. I will lay down my life for you. And Jesus tells him, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go where you wished. But when you grow old, you will, and this would be a phrase we will see people using about the cross, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten your belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. And John does tell us that this was to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, follow me. Peter's saying, for you to follow me, Peter, for you to love like I love, is a call to the cross. Follow me. Remember earlier, Peter said, I'm going to follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said, you will not follow me now, but you will follow me later. And so Jesus is saying, this is now the later. This is the moment and the time to decide, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered, where I'm going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow me after. So what Jesus is not concerned about is the past. What Peter said he would do, what Peter said he wouldn't do, what Jesus is saying is, now you said you would follow me, and I told you later, and now's the time. What's Jesus concerned about? Where are we going to go from here, Peter? What does the future look like? How many times do we imprison ourselves in the past when what God is calling us is to the future? And so God is calling for Peter to be a shepherd just like Jesus was a shepherd, to care for the sheep, to tend the sheep. And that will require Peter giving up his own life. And Peter does follow Jesus. Peter does fulfill that promise he made, because eventually Peter does, in fact, lay down his life for Jesus. History will attest to the fact that Peter did die by crucifixion. But there's one more piece of hesitation here that we find in these passages. And the missional hindrance here is comparison. Not fixing our eyes on others, not Jesus. So Jesus says, hey, Peter, follow me. And what's the very first thing that Peter does? When Peter saw this, so he saw that the beloved disciple was there, and so he looks over and he said to Jesus, Lord, what about him? And Jesus said to him, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me. How many times does Jesus call us to do something? And we look around and we think, well, I mean, are we going to do this? I mean, are we going to do this together? Is this something that you're going to ask me or call me to do by myself? So what we notice with the disciples is that when it comes to the mission, they all have the same mission. The disciples, they are sent. But when it comes to the method, when it comes to the outcome, when it comes to the process, when it comes to the places they go, each disciple is going to be called to something different. And so what do we focus on? What do we think about? What Jesus is calling us to do. And so Jesus does rebuke Peter because he's too concerned about what's happening beyond him. Peter thinks that God ought to just operate like a photocopier. If I've got to do something, then everybody else should have to do it. And let's just make multiple copies of the same calling, of the same commission, of the same everything. Some of us have gifts of service. Some of us have gifts of speech. What is that to you? Follow Jesus. Some of us are going to be great at building things that need to be built, and others are great at using computers. What is that to you? You follow me. Some of us are going to speak for God, and you will be praised for it, and you will be thanked for it, and you will be appreciated. And some of you are going to speak for God, and you will be made fun of and ridiculed and cursed. And what is that to you? You follow me. Fix our eyes on Jesus and follow him in the areas that he has called us. We started this morning talking about the importance and the need for having bridges. How do we get from here to there? And what we need to see of these disciples who become these bold apostles is that Jesus had to walk them through a process. He had to continue working with them. He had to deal with their feelings of inadequacy. He had to address the fact that there was, at least for one of them, some haunting in the past that needed to be addressed. He needed to address the fact that there's going to be, and we'll see it in the early church, there's going to be some comparison that goes on. Well, I'm going to follow this guy. No, I'm going to follow this guy. And yet Jesus is going to lead them where he needs to go. But we notice one thing from Peter's instruction, that one of the biggest pieces of unfinished business is always the unfinished business of individual hearts. Peter still needs to be taught. Peter still needs to learn. Peter still needs to grow. So how did Peter become who God needed Peter to be? And the answer is simple. It was Jesus. Jesus was the bridge that led him where he needed to go, that taught him what he needed to teach him. And so I think this passage invites us to say, if I am here in life and I want to get from there and I wonder, how do I do that? The answer is Jesus. Jesus is what leads from one life into a new, transformed life. And so to believe in Jesus is to allow him to lead you across that bridge into newness. And it's not instantaneous, it's not momentary, but over life, you will be formed into the kind of person that God desires to form you into. So may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. As we go from here, we go with the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ, with the love of God, and with the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. If you have any kind of a need, we're going to stand and sing a song and just invite you to come to the back while we stand and sing this song together. Let's go ahead and stand.